Welcome to the season one finale of A Podcast.
This is part five of our House of Horrors series.
The Takedown.
Now nobody's going to be quiet until you do something.
Yeah, that's right.
So they did something.
Yeah.
It was on September 22nd. Shira was there to witness it. Couldn't believe it. They went in. They got the dogs. And we thought, that's it. Our job is done.
I mean, we really breezed over, like, cops got entry. Like, what happened? The cops got entry. They opened the door. Tell us what the scene looked like. What did they find? Was it what you expected?
So if I can say something to that, I know we were very frustrated with the amount of time that it took for law enforcement with law enforcement and the law. I will say that when they did show up, they were prepared, okay?
Yeah, they showed up hard.
They showed up hard, and I will say that. Arizona Humane showed up with three or four trucks. Firefighters were there. They had their hazmat suits. They had those curtains that blocked the view into her home. So that tells me that they had this planned for some time, and they were trying to figure out a way how they were going to execute it. So there is that. I will say that that didn't just happen from one night to the next. Right. They had to get everybody on board. This is what you are going to do. This is what you are going to do. This is what you are going to do. And so when they showed up, and I think it wasn't until Shira was there and she's like, guys,
I couldn't believe it.
And I was like, no, they didn't. You know,
I think that it was. I think you're right. Like, it was definitely going to happen. But I think it became a rush job because the fact that even that day, like, as I'm standing there, I see the social services guy. What is it called?
Adult protective service.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like, I almost feel like they were like, oh, shit, we can't wait any longer. Let's just throw it all there. Like, I feel like it would have taken longer, but we put so much pressure on it at that point.
They had to.
And then the media, it was just like too much. I don't know. I mean,
And I think we know now, right, that when the police went in there, when Arizona Humane went in there, that basically every room was covered, stacked kennels. There was feces on the wall, piles. I remember a firefighter said that there was like 3 feet of poop on the floor.
Bathroom was not usable.
The bathroom was not usable. We know that there was 5 dead puppies or dogs in the freezer, one of them being Angel. Angel was the one where Dee was at the vet and was like, oh, I saw that dog come in here. That dog was in the freezer.
And the carpet was like squishy. Like when
the carpet was
on
squishy.
It was like squishing from urine. Just, I mean, imagine how much urine to like step there on a carpet and it feel like a sponge.
Right.
You know?
And then, so we know that now because we read the probable cause affidavit and I had read that on Alive. It's on my Instagram page. And I remember reading that, and Justin was the one that had found it and, you know, or got a copy of it and sent it.
Justin Lum,
the investigative reporter from Fox. He was like, I remember he called me and was like, Becca, I have the probable cause affidavit. And I was like, okay, great. He's like, wait, let me walk you through this first before you read it, okay, because it's hard to read. And then that's when he told me about, like, what they saw and the dogs in the freezer and that it was next to food that her mother would eat. And then when they talked to April and that she saw nothing wrong with that. And, you know, it was just the most horrible thing to read. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, my God, what did Butters see? Right. What did Squeaky see? What did they experience when they were there? And then, but it was also a validation. 2 months of work that I had really, like, when I tell you that I was obsessed, like, I was obsessed. I was unhealthy, you know, but I was quite, no pun intended, like a dog with a bone,
that's,
you know?
So unnecessary.
And it, I mean, it turned out the way I thought it would, you know, or I was right. But, you know, that's what
think,
I remember.
Tell me if you guys agree with 100% certainty. If you didn't do what you did, and if you guys didn't do what you did, the dogs would still be there.
They'd still be
everything 100%. Would still be as it is.
Yeah.
I am not giving any credit to Chandler, VD, or Arizona Humane Society. They took way too long, and they had way too much evidence.
Their hand was forced.
And so all of, I mean, just the fact that, like, everybody in that neighborhood is breathing in human feces and like
animal and
feces.
Neighbors were calling the police on them so, multiple times, making reports, and nothing was
it
done.
It shouldn't have taken this long. No. And those other dogs and Rudy would still be alive. Like, it should not have taken this long. And they handled it. I'm sorry. I'm still upset at the way it was handled in every way. They lied to my face at the Arizona Humane Society. They told me that Rudy was still alive. You don't fucking lie. Why? What did that do? We got insiders leaking information to us. That's how, you know, like, they did not handle this well. And, you know, I forgot what else I was going to say. That's okay. I just got really mad.
You asked what they found inside the house that night. And it was everything that we expected, but I think it was just multiplied, right? Yeah. I think we were expecting, like, 30 dogs or so. To find out there was double that. To find some were actually dead on site in the freezer. You know, obviously the feces, the filth, the mom. And then of course, when we were in court, fast forward, and we'll go to that because I think that's really probably important to mention. We heard the details, and then we heard the actual testimony from the animal control officers and stuff. And then we actually heard about the truth about what was found, which is like when they went into the bathroom, you know, and the door is closed and there's no light and the lights are off and there's a dog sitting in an empty kiddie pool who had chewed her own tail down, you know, and to be I'll skip ahead for a second, to be in the courtroom is the first time I heard that. It was Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ruby, a husky, had chewed her own tail down. And as the animal control officer is giving this testimony, and I'm sitting in a, felt like a church pew, but it's a bench in a courtroom, and I was holding someone's hand. Maybe I was squeezing yours. I don't know. And they're going into detail about how they found these animals. It wasn't even the physical. It wasn't the physical pain or suffering. It was the psychological torment of being without water, food, light, touch, fresh air. Mm-hmm. The air quality was so poor. That's why they're in hazmat suits. They could not safely breathe the air in that home. You know, it was so infested with fleas and mites and other types of disgusting bugs that come from squalor that the people who entered the home without protective gear on had bites on their legs that had to be medically treated. Mm-hmm. And so these dogs are living in this literal darkness. And Farley was also in that bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Farley has pressure sores and wounds that were, you know, infected and swollen. Just to be sitting. I mean, dogs, think about when you leave. Think about how many people, stay with me here. How many people don't want to put their motherfucking dog in a crate for 8 hours, Monday through Friday, when they go to work, on a nice dog bed with an expensive chew toy and the Furbo camera on them. People literally tell me, oh, I don't use a crate. These dogs lived in diapers and in crates for months.
Stacked, stacked crates. So they're peeing on one another.
Yeah.
You talk about like, well, oh, why are you so emotional? Animal control officers saw this fucking shit with their eyes and said, we can't do anything. I'm paid to get out of bed every day and save animals like this, but I can't do anything.
That's what's unforgivable. It's unforgivable.
Yeah. So that is why we then use social media to set up our own motherfucking tip line, because we decided to become our own investigators. Mm-hmm. And it was the most maddening thing. You couldn't pay me enough to do that job, even if it was official and through the city. Because then I flew from Washington and down to Arizona to meet up with Coco. And I don't even know who else was there. People from the community that watched on social media. The
Facebook page was made to help find marbles. There was a lot of people from the community to help.
Yeah. We posted a tip line. So Andrew's, you know, managing the tip line up in Washington, and he's fielding information to us.
Right.
And fielding information to you. Mm-hmm. So anything that was kind of like official that needed
some vetting or something.
Vetting or due diligence. Mm-hmm. You guys would dig in and do that. Anything that required insane force or boots on the ground or hand-to-hand combat or climbing under bushes and deserts or into dumpsters, Coco and I, you know, and there was still shady shit going on.
Yeah.
You know, we're going
like,
in.
Like, there's nothing. I mean, there's with this whole part, it almost, for me, it got worse after the dogs were seized.
100%.
It was terrible.
It was.
That's what I'm saying.
The dogs, you know, it was great to know that they were at least receiving food and water and, you know, whatever treatment was happening. But when the dogs were seized, I was standing in the neighbor's yard watching everybody come out. I never saw marbles, and I didn't see everybody, but I thought for sure I was going to see my dog. You know, you just know if you're going to, I didn't see my dog. And the next day there was horrific, you know, atrocities and just the worst of the worst that happened after that moment. And then there were some situations that people came out of the woodwork, and I couldn't believe what people were doing to help us. And one of them was immediately, we were not supposed to know what dogs were at Easy Humane. They wouldn't tell us shit. They wouldn't help us. They were pissed at us. We were pissed at them. And people that worked there were emailing us and saying,
I could lose
my job for this. I want you to know this is who I have. Right. I did not see marbles anywhere. I went up and down these wings. And I said, is there a possibility he was at the other campus? Sarah and I drove back and forth. One of the campuses said, oh yeah, they did take some dogs to that campus. So we went over there. I had my phone on record in my purse. Even if I'm not doing an investigation, my phone is never not recording. That's how it is. I have to record everything, monetize what I do, create a blueprint so people can help other animals with situations. It is always recording. And one of the control officers that was trying to give me some information, I was talking to her and she was being pretty nice, but couldn't tell me anything. And saw my phone, looked down and saw it. And she's like, is that phone recording? And I go, oh yeah, just audio. I record my audio. And she goes, nope, I'm done. And wouldn't have anything to do with me. And I go, oh no, I can shut it off. No, I'm not. I'm just trying to find out if he's here, what, you know, any of that. And that woman looked at me and it was like a fucking scene from a movie. She raised her eyebrows and she said, I can't help you. You probably shouldn't have gave your dog to that woman, and turned around and walked off. And she was a lead in that field over there. And, mm-hmm. and I was just standing there with my jaw on the ground. Like, did that just fucking happen? Are you kidding me right now? She's going to spin it on me, which rightfully so. You're right, motherfucker. I should not have given my dog, but now here we are. So it just, there were things that got worse and things that got better, but there was somebody that had let me know.
Nothing got better. Marbles. I disagree. I'm sorry. Nothing got better. It only got worse.
No, that was horrible.
Well, I mean, there was a different level of help that came to play as opposed to, the administrative help from Humane or from the police department. Now it was people, we're realizing we got people involved with us. They are involved with these dogs and they are risking their own situations, putting themselves in our shoes because they wouldn't want to be us. Mm-hmm. And they said specifically, if I were you, I would want to know. And this is what I can do for you. Right. You know, they were giving us information. So we found out Marbles wasn't there. And then we got tipped about a second location. And my God, I mean, this is just like the most hellish time that I can think of. Like, Sarah and I do, like, just running, trying to run the organization, trying to maintain a certain amount of sanity and composure so you can keep your audiences engaged and up to speed on what's happening, while simultaneously you literally just want to go to sleep and never wake up because of the choice you made, and you don't know where your dog is. And all of these horrible, horrible ideas of where he could be. If that's how bad her main location is, how bad is the second? And is anybody even there? Is he locked in a suitcase just suffocating? Is all of these, and Kimberly flies back down, and every single day for
10 days.
Almost. For how long?
I was down there working nonstop for 10 days.
For that, and then we even took it further. Yeah. Every single day, we had a tip of somewhere that my dog could be, that he was spotted, and we were hell-bent on finding that second location, because then we're finding out that there are a handful of dogs that did not make it to AZ Humane, and where are those dogs at? Yep. We have no idea. They're not the dogs in the freezer. We're just trying to figure out, well, where did they go? Where, okay, they were healthy when they got to her. Okay. They were there at this time.
Let me interject. The whole reason this is happening is because everyone refused to have any communication with us. Nobody would confirm
exactly right. which dogs and what information they did have, mm-hmm. they would not yep. tell us anything. Mm-hmm. Not the yep. police, not mm-hmm. the Humane Society. So they're conducting this investigation and obviously uncovering information. We're literally running our own parallel investigation. They have yep. all the power, right, and the connections that law enforcement does. We're going solely off of social media.
Yep.
And you'd be shocked at what came in. We were getting information that tied her all the way back. That's how we found about, like, the Little Miss Amazing pageant. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, right, so we're literally working as novice, wet behind the ears, like, investigators. Mm-hmm. But with no training, no nothing. The only tools we had was, like, our tenacity and whatever was coming in on social media.
Which still to this day makes no sense, because when detectives work a case, when anybody works a case, you're supposed to talk to as many people as you can, right? As many witnesses as you can. They should have been talking to us. They should have taken our calls. I must have left Detective AC like 20 messages before I just went off. They were too concerned with covering their ass. They weren't concerned with actually doing what was right.
Yeah, because I think if it was about the, you know, we all speculated, oh, it's the fear that they're going to tell us something and we're not trustworthy and we're going to take it to social
no.
media. Have us sign an
no.
NDA.
Right.
Have right. us sign an NDA. Like, that's intimidating. Having a law enforcement agent make you sign a non-disclosure agreement to keep your mouth shut on social media, mm-hmm. to be looped in on the case. None of us would said a thing.
I don't even know how they still have jobs. That's the worst detective work I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Also, I just yeah. want to say a couple things that keeps going through my head, because every time Coco says, like, we already fucked up. Like, first of all, like, if you see a dog get hit by a car and a woman drives up and says, put him in my car, I'll take him to the hospital, are you going to ask her 9 million questions? Or are you going to think, okay, this person's going to do what's right because you have some trust in people?
And why? And what would be her motive to do anything
exactly.
otherwise? Exactly. Like, you
and
know
so
what I'm saying?
A lot of these dogs that when we're saving, like, if we didn't do anything at all, well, they'd be dead. Or Bailey would still be in, you know, that tiny little cage in Mexico, dead. So it's like, we're not like, this isn't like, oh, I want to do this as a career and make money. We're doing this because we can't not do it. Right. If I wanted to make money, I would have kept doing what I was doing. I was making a lot of money doing it. So, like, for anybody to say, like, oh, like, you fucked up. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we're doing this because we can't not help animals, and we're doing the best we can, but also, like, it's kind of like blaming a woman for wearing clothes and then her getting raped. Like, you gotta blame the psychopath. You can't blame that girl.
Well, you have to blame the system. The system is very
yeah.
broken.
Right? Yeah, but, like, you don't yeah. blame the trusting
you don't
people.
Blame
you
the
don't
victims.
Blame
There's
the...
a lot of victim blaming.
Yeah.
This is where... I think this is where I got, you know, when you said, like, okay, I'm going to go for this. This could tank my organization. This is where I put my organization on the line, because Jenny and I talked and immediately we went into strategizing mode. We're like, okay, the dogs in that house are in our wheelhouse. We already knew what we were up against. We already knew we were up against the ableism. We knew they were at risk of euthanasia, sick or not. And immediately we reached out to every single vet and vet tech we knew, and we were foolish enough to think, and this is my ego, right? Like you said, oh, I thought I was gonna roll up and just be like, I'm fucking Coco and here's what's gonna happen. Well, I am cut from the same cloth. And so I thought that I was gonna have my vets, literally our clinic head, call or write into Arizona Humane Society and say, be like Josh, we'll take all the dogs, we'll fund them, we'll hospitalize them, we'll provide offsite care, because we didn't want our dogs going to the Humane Society. No shade to the Humane Society, but we'd already seen a lack of action and a lack of advocacy. Mm-hmm. And we also knew that even the most compassionate vets still have a lot of ableism and their own prejudice narrative against profound disabilities. And we knew April had a lot of profound disabilities in her home. So there was this fear that we were going to be further victimized. And so that's when I put, you know, the BLJ on the line. And I'm like, hey, you know, with our massive platform for fundraising, with our veterinary connections, with, you know, our veterinary discounts, if we can, that was the whole mission, right? Let's get the dogs out of AHS. It'll be as easy as a phone call. I really thought it would be as easy as a phone call. Oh, be like Josh. Oh, they'll help us. Great. And that's when we really learned the truth of the matter, that not only had we not really accomplished much of anything, mm-hmm. we just simply moved them from one prison to another where we still had no say, we still had yeah. no answers.
But at least they got food.
And we didn't even know which dogs made it out alive. True. We were going off of solely, right, infield photos.
Once the animals were seized, I want to say that it was a few days later that Shira called me, and I remember Shira was like screaming and crying on the phone, and she was like, they euthanized Rudy. They euthanized Rudy. And she was like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And she was just, and then I started crying, and we had thought this whole time that
he was alive.
They would tell us.
They
told us that no dogs had been euthanized. Right. I don't remember
who. They told me to my face.
Yeah, and I think you had told us that. And then we found out later that five of them were euthanized. So at this point, we were like, well, shit. If they're just euthanizing dogs without talking to us first, or at least giving us the courtesy of saying, look, and I would respect that. If they had called and said, look, you know, Butters is not doing well. It is inhumane to keep him suffering. Can you get down? I would have been like, I will be in my first flight out. I'll right. be right there. Just let me at least be there when you put him to sleep.
Right.
And I'm the last person that he saw, you know, but they didn't do that.
And with Rudy, I was there and Katie was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were there in the lobby almost like at the same time.
We literally could have held his hand.
Right.
It felt like we were victims all over again. Yeah. And it was an insult to how experienced we were at pulling dogs from these exact situations. I mean, essentially, Coco, you pulled Marbles from the same situation that we were trying to save him from a second time. Mm-hmm. It's not our first rodeo. So it was also very confusing as to why they did not want to use our help, because normally the shelter, and not just obviously, as you know, county, right, but also Humane Society, reaches out to rescuers for dogs to come save dogs from their shelter that are rescue only.
You have special needs rescues that is your specialty, and then you have Arizona Humane Society, who actually says reasons for euthanasia, all these dogs would be euthanized within a second. They euthanize dogs for UTI.
Yeah.
And you're going to have the audacity to make a life or death decision for one of our dogs?
Yeah. So it was very maddening. I felt like I was stripped of all of my power, my experience, everything. It was like my voice didn't even matter on the very topic where my voice is normally considered an expert opinion.
Right. And so I think at that point we were like, well, we can't let this happen with any other dog. Let's get an attorney to file an injunction, a temporary restraining order, you know, that they can't just euthanize any more dogs. And so we were recommended Tim Ducar by the criminal attorney, John Schill, to help us get this petition filed. And I don't think I had the first conversation with Tim. It wasn't until later, but Coco had the first conversation.
Yeah. She put down a $5,000 retainer.
Yeah.
And then she said, Kimberly, will you take over? Because this is not, I'm trying to put the camera on you guys so Coco knows who she's talking to. She was like, I think you said like you want to pass the buck to someone basically that would handle this. Yeah. Right. So I was like, okay, I can do that. I can talk to a lawyer. That's great. Perfect. And then I got on the phone with this guy. And immediately it took like 15 minutes to try to describe what was going on. And remember, keep in mind, this was a referral. We were referred to this guy. We were told this guy can get the job done. We were told he's a real lawyer. He can get the job done.
Yeah.
So we've paid him a $5,000 retainer. And according to your expertise, you thought this would maybe be a $5,000 to $10,000 investment.
Yeah.
Total. I thought I can fundraise for that. I fundraised. BLJ did the fundraising for it. And we acquired the services of Tim Ducar. And I had my first phone call with him. And it took 15 minutes for him to understand. And by the time I spoke to him, so the dogs were seized on a Friday. And I spoke to him, I believe, on a Sunday morning. Okay. Around 11 a.m. And he, after about 15 minutes, he's like stammering. And he's like, okay, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to get the dogs out of her house? And I said, Tim, the dogs were seized from her house on fucking Friday night.
Yeah.
I want you to file a TRO, an injunction, so that the Humane Society does not euthanize our dogs. He was so confused. And that, to make a very painful long story short, it took that guy, I would say, a full business week, five days.
More than that, yeah.
I think we bled into the next week to file this paperwork. At the end of the day, I think our legal bill with him, let's see, the PI was $8,000. So we've paid like $34,000, $36,000 less $8,000 is what we've paid this guy. He accomplished exactly zero.
Right. And to be fair, I want to make...
There's nothing fair
about there's nothing fair about this. But just on the record, he did... That's probably better. On the record, he did file the petition, the TRO, the injunction. But we had to, like, handhold him because he didn't even put April's name on the petition the first time. Yeah, The second time he forgot to sign it.
But also by the time all was said and done, that TRO was filed either at the same time that AHS was prepared to release the dogs, or they something like that, because basically it was filed and then those initial dogs were being sent home. So it didn't accomplish it. It didn't really spare anyone.
The ones that were not the ones that were microchipped were already going to be released.
Yeah,
I remember that. And then because remember April had like a deadline to request the hearing, so she was letting those first go. And it was just a shit show. The whole thing was a shit show.
Yeah, and I think what was most frustrating for me, and I think maybe for us collectively, is at this point, once the lawyers were involved, then there was a sort of an unspoken gag order. You can't talk about what's being said. We can't talk about what was being done. April herself had already been arrested and let out, so April was watching. Everyone was watching. We couldn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And we knew we weren't getting solid representation, but we didn't know how to get any better representation. And so that's why we kind of started our own investigation. So while I felt very victimized by our lawyers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were on the call where I lost
they took advantage of the situation. We were victimized by so many people. I mean, the police, the detectives, the Arizona, everything in Arizona, the lawyers, I've never seen more ineffective, gaslighting,
unprofessional.
By the way, I'm sure we all were, but when my friend who's FBI called to check in, they called me a domestic terrorist. Like, that's the level of professionalism.
Who called you a domestic terrorist?
Either Maricopa County or Chandler PD, they said, oh, yeah, she's the domestic terrorist that flew in and started yelling at this woman and all of her neighbors.
Have they seen you? Like, come on.
All 97 pounds of
her. They could have avoided that.
But that's what I mean. Like, that, and they were laughing. Like, that that was
very unprofessional.
The professionalism of it. That's how much they cared. And I've just never seen anything like it. But on the positive, we are all so badass. Look at everything we accomplished despite all of these idiots.
Very true.
And the legislation that
legislation that has
come out. What did you
say? I'm not there yet.
I really do think too that on that day that we were at the house, that first day when you came to town, mm-hmm. and Sandy was there and the other D was there, mm-hmm. and we had a pretty good group of people that were there. We were there all day and we stood in front of that house and we waited. Yeah. And she just was not going to budge. But if Miranda from Animal Control would have actually done something that day,
yeah,
Rudy would not be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's unforgivable.
Dogs would have been saved and we wouldn't have had to hire a lawyer.
It just doesn't make sense. It's unforgivable. In LA, dogs are property. They're property everywhere. But you get a cop that loves the animals, that cares, they'll get that dog out. You know, it does come down to the individual.
It also, if I may, please. In our shelters here, we have something called a good Sam. So if an animal comes in like Rudy or, any of the dogs come in and the shelter wants them to go into a rescue that can actually cover financially whatever's ailing them. We took in a husky that had been thrown over the Slauson Bridge onto the 10. Her body was broken. Yeah. That was a case that had to be tried. And this dog had to stay with us until the case was tried. And then she was adoptable. But we were, as rescue, partnered with
They have
the with option. City. That dog came to us and we got her the medical attention that she needed. And then she just went to a foster home until she was able to be adopted out.
You're talking about when dogs are on investigative hold.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
And this,
they have a choice.
And that's what Arizona does that too. And when I, when we, when Jenny and I talked, we have a very amazing veterinary hospital that
our medical team is phenomenal.
Phenomenal, you know, and they can do a lot. And, you know, they wrote to Arizona Humane on our behalf and said, our facility will provide and be like Josh will financially, you know, fundraise.
We tried
and network
every avenue.
You know, and they said no.
And why? Why we
well,
didn't
that,
say no?
Why?
So, because we also said AHS, like, let us help alleviate your problem. Because think about it. Every shelter is over capacity, even Humane Society. Now add 50 more dogs. Now add 50 more dogs that are high need. So mm-hmm. each dog requires the care of like three regular, you know, mm-hmm. typical dogs.
Right.
So they're dealing with this massive amount. And here we are with an impeccable reputation as a medical rescue, a disabled dog medical rescue with veterinary endorsement. Let us lighten the load. Let us pick up the fucking cost. Mm-hmm. We said, be like Josh, we'll pay out of pocket. We'll cover all the dogs if you give them to us. And this was the big to-do on social media where people, you know, they realized they, you know, the work with April was temporarily done. Let's find someone new to go after, you know. Oh, be like Josh said. Be like Josh said. We have the network, the money, the connections to get every single one of those 50 dogs out of that hospital and provide for them and hold them and care for them and care about them until their rescuers can make accommodation.
If you let us take them out.
If you let us take them out. What are we going to do with it? Let us take them out and what? Like, what else are we going to do besides provide what you guys don't even provide in your shelter? We can provide specialty. Right. So it was just, it was very, we watched the dogs stripped of their dignity. Mm-hmm. And I felt stripped of my dignity as a rescuer mm-hmm. and as an advocate and as a well-spoken, educated communicator saying, this is what I can do. This is how we can collaborate. And I was shut down. And I felt very victimized. And we talked a lot about that. It was one of the things that we were dealing with behind the scenes, above and beyond sort of the trauma and the exhaustion, mm-hmm. is that it's like, you do at the end of the day, second guess yourself. You know you're not in the wrong, but everyone is pointing their finger saying you're wrong.
Right. But and you also, I mean, you have a place like Arizona Humane Society. Their whole job is to take care of animals. I had to call in favors, and the vet said to me basically like, this is off the record that I'm doing this, so that she would give Chester his meds so that he wouldn't have seizures. How is that something that I have to call in a favor and keep it on the DL? None of this makes sense.
It doesn't. Because none of that feels like it's in the best interest of the dogs either.
It has to do with
ego and power and human stuff that's not about the dogs.
Or something behind the scenes that we're not privy to.
Right. Yeah. Or that.
That
and we may never know.
And we may never know.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that's the case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But on the positive, so many amazing people came together. And
absolutely.
We are going to change things. It's maddening right
Coco's
now.
Coco's going to change things.
But
Coco's going to go break down some doors.
Coco, do you have anything you want to add? I know, like, we kind of skipped around. I think it's just because so hard to capture.
You know, God, you guys, we could go on for days about that. There's even as we're, like, talking about this, there's pieces where I'm like, oh, fuck, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You know, there was so much trauma going on throughout nonstop. And even, like, when Kimberly left and then it was Sarah and I and just chasing leads and things that looking back, I look at it and think, how did we mentally pull it through? Because it just is unreal to me. It's really, there's so many details, you know, and maybe that's a song for another time, or maybe we don't ever need to think about them again. But I just feel like that there's so many things that we have that we learned throughout this, and some really, really, really important lessons that I don't think had this happened, we wouldn't have realized. And the
absolutely
obviously the, you know, the obvious of coming together and doing this, but something that's triggered in the more recently was just how incredibly powerful we are And, you know, I always think about that for myself and for my team and, you know, the girls that I'm working with and you guys. And I know that, you know, I know we're all a force to be reckoned with, and we're just, that's who we are. That's why we lead the way with our organizations. But to actually think that writing, taking this, and because we had the balls to take it to social media, because we knew that there was nobody else coming for us and we had to have that help. And then to put it out there for everybody to see and stay on top of it and not duck and dive and, you know, tuck tail and say, I'm never going to do this again, because it is, Ellen, you know, this is the worst I can't imagine. I can't believe that what I went through was Sarah and I. There's part of me that, like, you know, you disassociate a little bit, because how the fuck else do you go on? How else do you do things?
Your life and as you know it is over. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like a cool thing that I was part of where I'm like, oh my God, like everyone's like, oh, you guys are so incredible. Thank you. I appreciate that. I understand the sentiment behind it, but from where we're standing, I don't feel like, oh, it was some big, like we finished a big class project and got an A. It feels like someone tied a rope around our waist and drug us behind a truck and tortured us and tormented us, you know? And at the end of the day, you know what we did? We saved 50 motherfucking dogs that had already been saved. Think about what it takes to accomplish saving and healing and adopting out 50 dogs. Now do it twice.
But what I'd like to think is that this is going to help future dogs, because it shows that when incredibly powerful women or men come together, and there's so many amazing people that stepped up, it just showed us how many of us there are. And if we all stick together, we can change things. Obviously, there's a lot to change because the situation was horrific. And yeah, it still feels like just so much is like still such a failure. But so I still like think about it. And it's the only thing that makes me smile from all of this is that how many people came together for all of these dogs, how many, you know, the lawyers and the police in Arizona suck, but the people there are amazing. Yeah. As soon as I got there, I had, you know, Erica from a rescue pick me up from the airport, and like the amount of people that helped and came together. I think we can change things if we all stick together.
Yeah. What are the things for the people out there watching this? I guess what can we say? Like, if you have a hunch that something is not right, whether it involves you directly or your animals or somebody that you just gives you the chills up your back. Like,
always. These are
like
gut.
The whistleblower people. Like,
yeah, do something. You're the only person that they have. We didn't go to college to be rescuers. We're doing this because we love animals and we can't not do it, but you can do it. And don't rely on a call to animal control or a rescue. Do it yourself. You have to.
Right. Don't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
I think my, you know, it is always listen to your gut. Mm-hmm. Trust it. It is your intuition exists for a reason, right? And it's telling you when something is wrong. And that's number one. And then number two is, you know, being in rescue and the things that led me to believe that there was something wrong with the whole situation. I've listed some tips on my Instagram for people to follow, fellow rescuers to follow. Things to look out for, red flags, those type of things. But, you know, the biggest thing that for me with April was the lack of, one, the communication. She wasn't giving me updates, but the amount of dogs she was taking in. Mm-hmm. It wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. Right. And
even
I think
for a high volume rescue, that even was not normal.
Even for a high volume rescue, it wasn't normal. And for able-bodied, typical, you know, dogs. You just, it, we all
not
have
without
our
a facility, not without some type of a shelter.
Right,
facility.
Not even Yaki. Okay, yeah. We have an 80-acre ranch, and 10 acres of it are used primarily to house our animals. And even then, we are limited. We only can take in so many animals, and we tell people we are at capacity. We cannot take any more animals in. Mm-hmm. They don't listen, right? They'll still dump dogs, you know, at our gate and do, you know, ask us all the time, you know, can you take these animals? Can you take these animals? Because I can't do it. But we have limits, right? Most rescues have their limits.
And for a reason.
And for a reason, right?
Not because we're lazy, not right. because we don't like a certain dog, but at some point the work slips.
Right.
You know, and things go sideways. You're right. not doing ethical
you don't
work.
You don't have enough staff. You don't have enough money. You don't have enough space. You don't. There's all of these different reasons. And I would just ask people, pay attention, mm-hmm. okay? Pay attention to who you're working with, who you're talking to. Look at them a little bit further.
To the small things.
Yeah, to the small things. Yeah. Yes.
It's not the big things.
It's not the big
it's
things.
The small
it's
things.
The small things.
If somebody sends you a picture, look at the metadata. Mm-hmm. And that can be as simple as putting it in your Instagram stories. Uh-huh. And it pulls up. The date
of when the photo was taken.
Yeah. When the photo, and that is how
yeah,
we knew she was full of shit.
Right. And
yeah, I don't know if people understand that. So when you have a photo or a video and you go to post it in your story, when you click on the little smiley face box, right, where you can add captions and GIFs and all that stuff, one option is date. And if you tap on it, it will pull up the date.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's true.
That is super helpful.
Yeah.
Well, with April, the other thing, like, we never saw, or at least I never saw a photo of her.
Yeah.
So now, like, I would never adopt anyone that, I mean, I get their driver's license and everything.
We require driver's license checks now to verify that's who they are.
You what?
We require a driver's license check now.
So do we now. But, yeah, I think of how forgiving I was with some of her stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. And I don't know if it was one of you, but somebody said this to me, and it's so true. I think she also played on us. I know for me, played on us being women, because she alluded to myself, to Kevin, to other people that she was kind of hiding from her ex-husband.
Yes, that was a common line for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And I gave so much, what's the word, like
empathy.
Yeah. And you know, as a woman, like a lot of us have been through that. And I was freaking going through a case at the time, and I'm like, oh, of course, you know, and like, first of all, fuck her for using that.
Right.
But also, if you want to adopt a dog from us, you're gonna have to trust me with your identity if I'm gonna trust you
with my dog.
Yeah. It's our job. I mean, we are their voice. We're their advocate. And so we are the last thing standing between them and another Chandler 55.
Yeah. So the whole like, oh, I'm private about this, I'm private about that.
Well, then you don't get the dog. You can be private if you want. You can have all the privacy in the world. But these are our rules, and there is no bending them.
Right.
And that is our job.
Right.
Period.
Yeah, and the reality, sorry, one last thing, is there are going to be more psychos. There are going to be more weirdos that, you know, do this. And everyone's just doing the best they can. I mean,
yeah. Well, April will do this again.
Yes, she will.
She absolutely
when
will.
When she's out,
she'll graduate
do it again.
To humans.
But she'll do this again because she won't be in jail for long.
Right.
When she eventually does go there.
Right.
She won't, but she'll also have time served.
Right.
And she will do this again, and she'll do it even better because when she gets out, she will study. And this is another reason why I personally have not been sharing a lot on social media, is because I'm not fucking stupid. And now that I know how brilliant April is, I know that she'll be listening to this podcast. Hi, April. How are you? She'll watch
April.
Every post.
Up,
she'll
girl?
Study. She'll study you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She will study you, Coco. She will take, she will study and she will learn like good criminals do. Good criminals learn from the very people who track them.
Right.
And she will hone her crimes and she will hone her craft and she'll do this again and again and again.
Right.
And
unless people ask the hard questions. And we talked about this, right? How we don't want to be impolite.
Well, that's bullshit. And that really fucking chaps my ass, because Coco and I, we were not raised like that.
Right.
And we're the only two women in the world, I feel like, because that's what it is, right?
But it's true.
Be
right?
polite.
Don't
be polite.
Don't ask the hard questions. Yeah. And I have people messaging me almost every single day.
Well, what do I do? I'm so uncomfortable.
They'll ask me, you know, well, what should I ask? Ask for a driver's license. Ask for their bylaws. Ask for a list of their board of directors. Ask for their tax ID.
Yeah.
Ask for the state,
yeah.
their
also,
state.
Also, people are going to respect you for asking that and for requiring that. And
if they don't want
to
give it
they
to
give
you
an excuse for any of these hard questions, move on.
Right.
And as long as people get this message, to ask the hard question, it's going to be really difficult for the Aprils to continue to perpetuate these type of crimes. So ask the hard questions, get your contracts in order, right? Don't send animals anymore without your paperwork. You know, do all of the things that are like such an inconvenience. Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with everything you say. I'm just looking at the rescue industry. It's extremely fractured.
Yeah.
And the second you stand out from the bunch and you say, this is how I do it and this is how I think it's right.
It's funny that
the troops come for you.
No, it's funny that you say this. I shit you not. A couple weeks ago, I had a friend of mine who was fostering some puppies. And she was like, Becca, have you heard of this rescue that they're going to go to this rescue? And I said, no, I've never heard of this rescue, but ask this, right. this. So she does. And this woman replies and she's like, do you work for Yaki? And she was like, no. She's like, well, I see that you're friends with all of the Yaki people on Facebook. And she was like, yeah, I'm friends with them. And so I was like, you know what? Good. I'm glad that when people see that they're asking the hard questions, and if they can refer it back to Becca, then good. Then I did my fucking job.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing that this shows to me, it's not about us doing better. It's how much needs to change on the other side. Like, the system needs to change. Animals, I mean, all the serial killers, all the rapists, they start with animals. Like, until animal cruelty is taken seriously, and until people just treat animals better and we require it, like, we shouldn't have to exist. Rescue shouldn't have to exist. So much needs to change on the other end.
I hope that this can be a new thing in rescue where we're just a little bit more forward and transparent and we have these conversations.
Yeah, and we support each other and we're not like, you know, anyone that was like, I would never have to, dude, fuck you. That's not supportive. And you would have, actually.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to do till you're in the situation.
Okay. And be thankful that you weren't in it.
Yeah.
Any closing arguments, Cokes?
I think that's it. I mean, I don't know. The biggest thing, my biggest takeaway from this was, my God, the power of social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I talk about that a lot, but when you don't know what to do, when you don't, and you see something that is just going, you know, you've already called Humane Society, nobody's doing anything, you call the police, fucking post it.
Yeah.
Post it.
Yeah.
And in that caption, write, please tag everyone.
Yeah.
The cavalry will show up, and that is how things will happen. But you got to do something. You know, if you see something, you can't just, the amount of messages that have come through recently. Well, I tell everybody, you got to make your account public or I can't share it. If you're not going to do something, don't expect me to add more to my plate.
Yeah.
I cannot do all of
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Do something. Mm-hmm. And I've already laid out what an adult human, any adult human with no experience can do. And this is what it looks like. This is your picture. This is your template. Do it. As soon as you get it up, I will network it. I will take that workload because I've got the audience for it. That's what I wanted that and or work for that. And she, I've had a few people recently tell me, well, I can't do that because of privacy reasons. I can't do that because I have MS. I can't do that because everything is uncomfortable.
Right.
Everything that is good or worthy of hanging your hat on or worse, you know, whatever it is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. None of us just showed up because, like Shira said, we didn't just go to college because this was our dream. We saw a fucking need. We saw that there was a need in the marketplace, in society. There was a need for help. And we filled that void with ourselves, and we have given our own blood, sweat, tears. We gave up our time, our peace, and our sleep because it mattered to us. All you have to do is take a step and other people will join you. But you cannot see situations and come running to Becca or Kimberly or Shira or us or anybody and say, well, you guys did it. I know you guys know what to do. You can do it better. I don't know what to do. No.
Mm-hmm.
The animals are here for us to protect and for us to learn from. Mm-hmm. Bottom line. They are not commodities. They aren't for the circus. They aren't for the mass consumption and just breeding to consume. They are here for us to protect. That is everybody's responsibility. If you want to see change, you have to fucking do something. And if all you can do is share a post, that is more than enough. That is starting somewhere, but you have to do something.
Yeah. You said, oh, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, you said the line, the animals are here for us to learn from. And I think a lot of people think that means sitting back and going, look at him. Look how resilient Squiggy is. No. Learning from these animals for me means, what does it pull out of me? What uncomfortable places does it push me to? Who, what version of myself do I confront there? What pieces of me that I don't like or that I want to hide away do I lean into to get the desired result? Mm-hmm. And that for me was Chandler 55. There was not one part of that that felt good or fun. I didn't feel accomplished. I didn't even feel like I did a good job of communicating. I was so traumatized. But that's what it means to me when I say, I've learned from Josh, I've learned from Ford. These dogs have pushed me to access pieces of myself that I did not know existed.
I like that you said that, Coco, because something that Dee, the Halloween miracle, always says.
Yeah.
She always, when people have asked about Butters and the Chandler 55, and she always says, you know, why we do the things we do with animals is because animals don't have the time to feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are resilient and they do whatever they got to do. And if humans could act the same way, you know, we would be able to accomplish amazing things. Yep. And Dee has always, when she talks to her coworkers, they're like, oh, so Becca's into rescue. Yeah. Yeah. But you know why she's into rescue? Because animals are really amazing creatures and we have so much to learn from them. Yeah. Because they never, and when that's the big thing, they never feel sorry for themselves. They could be in the most terrible situation and they're going to figure it the fuck out. And so, yeah, I like that said that.
Yeah.
I just want to say that the fact that you guys, the out-of-towners, came to town for this and the in-towners came across town for this, just grateful that we could, you know, put this out there, and it's probably maybe even just the beginning. Like, there's so many, there's so much that we did not even cover. That I feel like is important and learning and all that stuff.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we don't know how this is really going to end.
We still don't.
We know she was arrested and indicted, but that remains to be determined.
Right? TBD.
Yeah.
And again, I want to just speak to the entire group, whether they're on this sofa or they're not on this sofa. It was such an amazing group of people that behind the scenes, literally, you guys, when I tell you that the phone was going all night long, ding, 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 shit was being figured out. And, you know, that was such an imperative part of this too. Mm-hmm. So they're not here sitting with us, but we just want them to know that.
Absolutely.
We're grateful. Oh,
yeah. It was a huge collaborative team effort. I mean, there were people from all over helping and finding things, and the discussions were all night long. I had to mute my notifications.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I had to mute.
Because I'm like, if I'm ever going to sleep and be able to do anything tomorrow, I need to make sure, you know, but then I'd go back and I would catch up. And
Yeah.
No, they were, all the people that worked on this were incredible, amazing.
Yeah. Instrumental in making it what it was.
Yeah, for sure. I would like walk away from my phone and then come back to like 500 texts of them. Yeah. All just like, just the information that
So
amazing.
Thank you guys.
Thank you. The hottest room I've ever been in.
Yeah, sorry. We can put the air on now.
No, it's okay.
Squiggles. I feel like I was so angry.
That's a wrap on season one. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe, and we welcome your questions and comments.